Sometimes I think about prohibition as a triangle, where activists are attacking the triangle from one angle, and political campaigners are attacking prohibition from another angle. And as legalization takes place, whether medical or recreational, there's another angle that business can attack from. You know, business is just another form of activism if it's done right. Brands can fuel change, and I think that that's one of the things that we're really excited about in countries and in states. In the U.S. is that, finally we're starting to see businesses fund some of these campaigns in other states and provide resources to campaigners outside of their state or outside of their country. And that's a huge change. That's a huge change from what we've seen, 2 years ago, 4 years ago, where it was much more difficult for political campaigners to raise funding from within within the industry. We talk about five ways that brands fuel change. And so our objective is to build bright, shiny brands that people can point to and say, that's what the end of prohibition looks like, and we feel comfortable with that, whether it's medical or recreational. And that's our objective. And so the five I'll walk through are change perceptions of the product and user, inspire confidence and trust, reduce barriers to change, create and imply legitimacy, and then directly create change. In the 50s and 60s, Honda decided they were going to introduce motorcycles to the U.S. And there was this perception on the left of motorcycles and people who rode motorcycles, and that was what Honda was trying to deal with. And so their objective was to put a mainstream face on motorcycles. And within 4 years, they were selling four times more motorcycles than Harley-Davidson. And the way they did it was through ads like this. You meet the nicest people on a Honda, right? It's really simple. But it changes perceptions of the product and user. Inspire confidence and trust. And so when Starbucks was initially ramping up, they had to educate people about coffee production around the world to raise the bar on coffee quality and people's consumers' perceptions of coffee quality. Reduce barriers to change. So Michelin was a tire company, right? And people didn't drive their cars a whole lot, and Michelin wanted to figure out a way to get people to drive their cars more. And so what they started doing was creating guidebooks. You could drive from Paris into the countryside and tour some spot or go to some restaurant. And that's how Michelin guidebooks started. That's how Michelin star restaurants started. They were trying to get people to drive more so they would use more tires so that Michelin could sell more tires. And so they're trying to change perceptions of what you should use a car for. And change the barriers, reduce barriers to change mentally. Create and imply legitimacy. So this one's a little strange, but condoms used to be sold in brown packages, like simple brown packages, unbranded. And so Trojan came along and started branding condoms and tried to create and imply legitimacy by normalizing packaging, normalizing branding. This has a really small quote, but the quote here is from the Surgeon General of the United States, and so they're trying to create and imply legitimacy around their brand and their packaging. And then the fifth point is directly create change. We're all, everyone's familiar with Tom's, but there's a brand that is directly creating change. It's the social conscience is woven into the core of that brand. It's the it's how we think about Rise Up, which is the charitable group part of Marley Natural that funded the expungement of the criminal records in Oregon. It's about directly creating change and tying that very closely into the core of the brand. One of the issues that a lot of people face in the industry is a lack of access to capital. And it's something that we faced 6 years ago. It's something that, that lots of people face. And Alex asked me to speak about this, about what sort of advice I would give to people who are looking to raise capital. And so, you know, my first point is tell a story. You know, I've heard thousands of pitches in my career, and the best pitches are always stories. You know, it's not a problem solution pitch. It's not a opportunity pitch. It's not a management team pitch. The best pitches are always stories. You know, genuine, true stories that people are telling about themselves and their team and their company. It's a pretty simple point, but it's my first one. The second one is show a vision. Don't just pitch a product, but pitch, or and the product can be anything. It can be a company, it can be a brand, it can be a service. Don't just pitch the product. Pitch a vision. Tell people what you're going to do, what you see your company or your brand or your industry looking like 1, 2, 3, 5 years down the road. And that vision is what hooks people. Hooks people into interest in you and your company. The third one's pitch, which is a little strange because, I've never shown this deck before, right? So you all had to suffer through the first time I've walked through it. But I guarantee you that if I did it 10 more times, it would get better. And that's my point here, is that when I pitch investors, there's 150 slides in that deck. I walk through 42 of them. It takes 32 minutes. I could do it in my sleep because I've done it 1,000 times. The first 50 times were just practice with people who I know would never invest, but I can tell that story, and I've refined that story over the last 6 years. So that I know that it works, and so practice makes perfect, which might have been a better way of saying that. Learn from no, it can become yes. And there's 2 points. This one, be nice. My proudest is the wrong word. The most satisfying investors for me to close are the ones who said no 4 years ago. So the first part is learn from no. Ask people why they said no. Gather their feedback in a nice, polite way, and try to improve using that feedback. And then continue to be nice to them. Continue to send them information, even if they said no, even if it was a harsh no. Continue to send them information. Continue to talk to them, because the most satisfying yeses, the most satisfying investors for me to receive are the ones, investments to receive, are the ones that where people said no 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And so that's important. Sometimes we tell people no, and I get lots of anger back, and that just closes the door. Show milestones. So every time I talk to someone, I say, the first time I talk to them, I'll tell them, we're working on A, B, and C. And it's a process, right? And so I may see them 3 months later, 6 months later, and I'm able to say, last time I told you we were doing A, B, and C, those are done. Now we're working on D, E, and F. And we hit those milestones, and the next time I talk to them, I'll tell them that we're working on G, H, and I. And that hitting those milestones and doing what you said you were going to do makes it easier to close those investors. Investors, next point is six. The investors don't fear making a bad investment. People make bad investments all the time. I'm going to make bad investments for the rest of my life. That's just part of being an investor. The key, what bothers me, what keeps me awake at night, is missing the good ones. People who had a chance to invest in, pick Apple, Google, any successful company, and didn't. That's what keeps them awake at night. The next one is do it and keep doing it. The worst pitch is someone who says, I'm looking for funding so I can go do X. And that's really difficult to work. It's really difficult for that pitch to work. It's always better to say, this is what I'm doing. I need capital to do these next things, but I'm doing it. I'm going to do it with or without you. I'm going to do it with or without your capital. Feelings. This one could be simplified probably to just be fear of missing out. There's a huge fear in investors right now, fear of missing out on this industry. It doesn't matter if we're talking about, doesn't matter what country we're talking about. And that fear is just going to accelerate. It will accelerate through sort of the next big milestones. It'll accelerate through the election. A lot of people are going to wake up on November 9th in the United States and be panicked that they don't have some investment in this particular industry. I really believe that mentally, from an investor perspective, it'll be the beginning of the end. And so they'll want some exposure. When Canada legalizes recreational cannabis, investors will want exposure. When Germany legalizes medical cannabis in the next 3 months, investors will want to invest in this industry. And so benefit from that fear of missing out and throw a little fuel on that fire and make people feel that fear. The next one's really simple. Don't lose fast, meaning we do a lot of research on people before they come and talk to us, and a lot of people do research on us before we go and talk to them. If I'm talking to an investor, they've read the top 10 articles about us, and so make sure whatever people pull up is going to be good. Whether it's an article about you or a Facebook post or Instagram, we look at all that stuff, and everyone looks at all of that stuff around us and our companies. And so, don't have something on social media that you wouldn't want an investor to see because they're going to find it. And then the last one's really simple: brand cliches. Not every brand in this industry has to embrace the cliches. Our thesis is that this is a mainstream product, and there will be more and more mainstream brands in this industry, and there'll be brands that segment all different kinds of consumers, from hipsters to baby boomers to women. There'll be premium brands, there'll be value brands, but they don't all have to embrace the cliches.